and welcome to Through the Pinard, your conversational podcast talking to midwives around the world about the research they are doing to improve midwifery practice. This research can range from small quality improvement programs and projects to those starting partway through or just finishing their postgraduate studies, and to those that have been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. So settle back and enjoy the conversation. And remember, you can continue the conversation on Twitter after you finish listening. Thank you for joining me today. Last Friday was the International Day of the Midwife celebration. And for the last 15 years, there has been a free 24-hour online conference called the Virtual International Day of the Midwife Conference. And this has been available at no cost for midwives and anyone really who's interested in childbirth. It's a really amazing conference. I was first involved as a presenter in 2017. And then in the last couple of years, I have been a facilitator. And as you know, my passion is around promoting midwifery research, hence why this podcast exists. And to have access to something that is free, that is international, and offers two presentations for every hour for that 24 hours is something that is amazing and definitely well ahead of its time. Before I start, I would like to humbly apologise if I mess up anyone's name. It's not a skill that I am good at and I'm trying to improve. My phonetic pronunciation can mess up the correct pronunciation of names. So my apologies. No offence is meant. So for the last few years, the World Health Organization has given a little bit of a pre-conference talk, and that was no different this year. And this year we had a talk from them looking at what their agenda is really in celebrating for midwives and in health. So they're looking at evidence to reality in six countries, evidence looking at the stages and how they're looking forward to improve midwifery education. They talked about the essential childbirth care course, an interprofessional midwifery education toolkit, and also did a summary of what's new for the World Health. What's really good about the VIDM, which I'll call that conference, is that every session is recorded. And not only is it recorded, it is then posted through Facebook page and through the YouTube channel at Virtual Midwives for you to actually access. So if you go to the YouTube channel in particular, you will see all of the recorded sessions from the previous years. So if you aren't up to a 24-hour marathon of constant information, then while you're sleeping, you know that you won't miss a section. And even if you're working, you won't miss a session because you'll be able to watch the recordings. It takes a couple of weeks to get all the work behind the scenes to get them up and going, but it means that you can catch up. So after the World Health Organization, we had the first keynote, and they kicked off with Sarah Stewart. Now, Sarah is the person who actually created the VIDM conference 15 years ago. So she was able to give us a little bit of a background on why and how she created it. And what she has done, she pulled out and handed it over to the committee that kind of runs, a volunteer committee that runs, and talking about what she's learnt and how things have progressed and what she hopes as well. And then it goes into the presentations. So as per usual, there's a conference call out for abstracts, for both oral presentations and for posters as well. And so it's then decided of the quality of the abstracts, the same as any other conference, peer-reviewed, but also we accept different languages. So we have not only in English, but this year we've also had it in Spanish, in Portuguese, and in Indonesian and well, and we're very much looking to expand the languages to allow that access for other midwives and birthing people and people who are interested in birthing to listen. And one of the Spanish sessions this year broke all attendance records, and we had over 400 people attend, because, and that was mostly from one section in Peru. So we're wanting to give voices to all the areas in the world that don't have a chance to attend conferences, that don't have a chance to actually show what they're doing in their part of the world and in the conditions that they work in. So the website that I'll put up with the posting of this podcast gives you an idea of what the presentations are that you can then catch up with on the Facebook page in a little bit or on the YouTube in a couple of weeks. The oral presentations, Paloma Wilkins, Jane Houston and Megan Arbor presented a quantitative assessment of postpartum blood loss, a quality improvement initiative in Metezo Peruvian midwives, and that was just done in both English and Spanish. Another presentation by Elizabeth or Lizzie Jones was relating across cultures, birth in the circumpolar north, so living in Alaska and her relationship and experiences up there, and especially with the effects of colonization and how they have Alaskan native and circumpolar childbirth traditions and outcomes, as well as the importance of birth in cultural community, continuity, I should say. The next presentation in the following hour was Elizabeth Arnold-Lay, Midwifery Management of the Fetus in the Persistent Occiput Posterior Position. And that was kind of looking through some of the techniques, identification, and knowing that we still know that 90% of OP fetuses will rotate to OA during the course, but we're also not sure of when that is for certain and what techniques we can use to help with that manual rotation. So that was discussed to promote and facilitate rotation. We also had a talk in Spanish by Shirapak, and that was with Tanya Perón-Otaque. And so you can, once again, if Spanish is your second language, you've got to listen to that and what they're doing in their area. We had another Spanish one by Susana Koo, Critical Midwifery Studies, A Place to Framing the Enemy of the Art and Science of Midwifery. And they included a summary of their experiences launching the first biannual summer school for critical midwifery studies held in July last year with multiple delegates from around the world. And they explained how their collective planning, including the principles of equity and accessibility. Another presentation was Jade Kong Zen, The Role of Culture and Spirituality in Post-Stillbirth Grief Healing of Bereaved Mothers in China. So a qualitative research. One of the really cool things about this conference that has kept me coming back over the last few years and wanting to step up and be more involved is that we do hear from other countries that you don't really get to hear in the national conferences. And it's not until you get the truly international ones that you can have that learning and that sharing experience. And because this is virtual, you don't have a cost. And so it opens the door up for a lot more people. So looking at how culture and spirituality play an important role in bereaved mothers' post-stillbirth grief healing, caregivers should avoid preconceived notions about grief, and a bereavement care guideline that is culturally and spiritually appropriate for China is required. Linda Day spoke about Where's My Baby? How do women experience separation from their baby at cesarean section birth? And we know that increasing rates of around 30%+ of cesareans are occurring, and in some hospitals it's actually higher than that. Part of the presentation was that separating mothers and babies at cesarean section negatively impacts that birth experiences, that as midwives we have the opportunity to recognise power imbalance and create a sanctum within the surgical environment, because we know that we want to make that positive experience and that bonding start as soon as we can. The next talk that followed through that was Wendy Foster talking about moral distress in midwifery and framing the issue. And we know how midwives are reporting feeling demoralised and the relationship to excessive workloads, unnecessary interventions, hierarchical medical system, and how does this negative psychological outcomes are key to the moral distress, and looking at the continuum from a low level of moral frustration to a moderate level of moral distress to severe and going to moral injury. And she was presenting a pilot tool to screen for moral distress across the continuum. One of the other programs is developing of the Rung Seha, a portable lactation room innovation in tourist areas, an Indonesian pilot program. Gilwati and Veni and Sri presented that. And Yogyakarta is a popular tourist destination, but the lactation rooms in public facilities in tourist attractions are difficult or non-existent. So they talked about their project. We then had Linda Sweet and Vedanka in the Green Maternity Project, a midwifery-led initiative to promote correct waste segregation on an Australian postnatal ward. So we know for climate sustainability, we also know sustainability and product sustainability, plastics as well, and it is the high cost to healthcare organisations. And so knowledge and attitudes to waste management were similar across both the pre- and post-intervention. However, they were able to show reductions in clinical waste at the measurements with up to a 71% decrease in clinical waste from the baseline to the final audit, and the accuracy of waste segregation also improved from the baseline to their final audit, resulting in a 48% reduction in the waste of management costs. Little things can make a big difference. And we're only up to starting now the seventh hour of the 24-hour marathon. So the next up was Fatima Siti and Andrea Wadi Asti, Adolescence in Decision-Making During Pregnancy and Childbirth, a Scoping Review. So looking how this is very much going through the literature, and from the over 2,000 articles, they actually found 9 that fitted their review. And the themes that came across this decision-making process during pregnancy and childbirth, factors affecting decision-making during childbirth, pregnancy and childbirth, forms of support in decision-making and expectations in decision-making. And so they talked about their review and the importance of it and where research needs to go. Rizza also spoke about designing digital healthcare to increase HIV testing amongst pregnant women in Indonesia. So once again, different countries have different areas of priorities and what they kind of need. So looking at the EK Estrum website, and they were designed for use on mobile phones to help with testing, and the pilot study demonstrated the feasibility of implementing a digital healthcare integrated solution in low-resource settings, which are really important. So they're kind of reporting on their first results of 3 months. Then we had one of keynotes, next keynote coming through, which was Indy Kaur, talking about professional midwifery and revolutionising maternal care in India. And once again, global services in India, much needs to be done in some areas, and it's changing the paradigm shift in maternity care and helping increase normal births, physiological births, promoting respectful maternity care in the state's public hospitals. And so this is a historic moment for midwives in the country, recognising the need for a separate professional training building on a strong cadre and rolling out midwifery care to women and newborns in the country. And so talking about her work and when she's partnered with the Indian government and also with the World Health and UNICEF to train midwives around India. And we know that with more trained midwives, we save more lives. And then Nurul Hijay did a presentation presented in Indonesia looking at postpartum depression and a scoping review on that. And in particular, focusing on teen and adolescent mothers and looking at some of the articles that they found that 32% of adolescent mothers have a chance of postpartum depression that requires immediate action. So looking at factors that influence that, but also looking at the need for ongoing care. We also had Tezgwa present maternal knowledge of fetal movement amongst third trimester pregnant women at JMC in Ethiopia. So looking at a different, this was a cross-sectional study, facility-based, done last year, and they were looking at the overall maternal knowledge regarding fetal movements is unsatisfactory. The respondents' residence, gestational age, pregnancy status, and the source of information were significant predictors of maternal knowledge. And so this allows healthcare providers to be able to change their care and to allow further research to occur as well, and education in particular, and how we change that education. Katrine and Abra delivered the session number 10 in digital tools for midwifery education and continued professional development, and they were looking at The Maternity Foundation provides access to updated WHO-aligned clinical guidelines via their Safe Delivery app. And so they've been using that to increase national training standards and curricula in Ghana, India, and Cambodia. And they shared their work on how they've made some improvements and what they're planning to do in the future as well. Yasmin Rose presented the importance of cord blood for fetus transition, and she used some props that were wonderful to talk about the journey of cord blood from babies born through the placenta. And it was really, went back to physiology and understanding what happens in that 1 minute of change before we start counting the Apgars, but also understanding why a 1 minute cord clamping is not sufficient, because more is actually happening. And the longer we can delay cord clamping to that 3 minutes, 4 minutes, or ideally when it stops pulsating, then the better is it. And her aim is to achieve optimal cord clamping for every birth. Session 11 saw Leah Briganti. She was there all the time, a qualitative study exploring how women at high risk for preterm birth experience midwifery continuity of care. And she was looking at some interviews with women and recognising that known midwives were there all the time, made women feel listened to and actively involved in clinical decision making, which contributed to women feeling less stressed and anxious during their pregnancy, birth, and early parenthood. So with this midwifery continuity of care models for obstetric complexities as well, then access, advocacy, and time should be embedded, can build on the trusting relationships and reduce anxiety. Once again, stuff that we know, but seeing it from different points of view, constantly being presented. The more we present it, the more we talk about it, the more it will be widely understood. Sarah Smits spoke about celebration and preservation of Mayan midwifery in Guatemala and looking at her experience of living and working within the communities and the cultural practice and the barriers to accessing the only hospitals around that many women birth at home with Mayan midwives, and that the Mayan midwives believe that you're born into the profession. It's not something that you've become, that you're actually born to be a midwife. Therefore, they've got a project there to actually help encourage support and training and education. Ponsanio presented a fit for purpose antenatal care services, perspectives from women with physical disabilities. Midwives have limited understandings of the implications of physical disability on women's utilisation of their care services, especially the antenatal care, which is where they were focusing. And respect for women with disabilities, dignity and needs should be emphasised in midwifery education and training. So we need to bring that into the undergraduate. We need to make sure that that diversity is included in education, so it's not just a one-off thing that we have to suddenly learn. So session 12 saw our next invited speaker, and this was Elizabeth Newman. And she was talking about the art and science collide towards a political philosophy of humanised birth. And so she kind of talked through different understandings, a little bit of theory, put it into practice, and she introduces the conceptual framework of the institutional paradox. So the framing of particular practices that are safe or risky, the effects of institutional momentum, and the positioning of midwives as guardians of normal within this system, which views birth as at best risky or at worst pathological. And so it was a really cool conversation on looking at the differences and how we can use the lens of care ethics to turn the work of humanising birth with the focus on relationality and the concept of attentiveness. So now we are halfway through the conference at session 13. And Tom and Moira presented a student stand at the door exploring views of professionalism in midwifery spaces. And so using the theory of artistry, there was a lot of poetry that they took from watching the students, but also watching and how the students interacted and what they said. So the method used as a conversation about professionalism with a group of final year midwifery students that was transcribed in the moment and immediately performed to the group as poetry. So the themes that came out of this were used about relationships and closer connection between spaces and the role models in them and for learning. And so that was a different way of presenting and very much showing the art and science working together. Adafin and Toma presented young midwives leading quality improvement in Bangladesh. And so they are two young leaders, 23 in Bangladesh, who are part of the board members of their midwifery association. And so looking at how they were able to use quality improvement methodology to help recruit and retain members and develop guidance on various different types of emergency situations that frequently happen in Bangladesh. And they found it hard to apply the QI methods to organisational developments, but they persisted by making it work, and therefore hoping that by sharing their lessons, others can find a less struggling pathway. And so they discussed very much the women-led civil society organisations that can improve gender equality and how they have impacted and worked with others, especially as midwifery is still a relatively new profession in Bangladesh. The other part of section 14, because coming to the next hour, was Laura and Tanya talking about pregnancy in prison partnership internationally. So PIPI, building a collaborative global network of best practice for and with women prisoners. So once again, another vulnerable group that we may not have a lot of exposure to, and depending on where your hospital or birth centre is, will depend on whether you're close to a prison facility and therefore are their primary birthing place. And so looking at internationally, and they've got collaboration between Australia, the UK, USA, New Zealand and Canada. And so they're talking about the women's prisons, what they're finding and what their plans are for the future. Joy and Sharman presented an evaluation of a 5-year midwifery twinning partnership between Bangladesh and the UK. And so this is one of the twinning partners that came through with the Royal College of Midwives and Bangladesh and evaluated in 2022. And this is the results. So the twinning was both organisational and also individuals. And the midwives are new to Bangladesh. So as we said, midwives are new to Bangladesh. And so they're working out from someone who's had midwives as a profession for longer, helping them bring their profession up. And also twinning has that mutual benefit of learning as well. So the partnership strengthened the midwifery associations and also midwifery leadership and impacted every area of the ICM's professional framework in Bangladesh. So the twinning facilitated reciprocal benefits in both countries, may work in other contexts. Section 15 saw Amina talking about the effects of nursing intervention program on thermal care of pregnant adolescents attending antenatal care at the primary healthcare centres in Zara Town. And so looking at, once again, in Indonesia, reported statistically significant improvements in their knowledge and practice of thermal care at post-testing. So we need to make sure that that information is available because of the risks of hypothermia. Session 15 also presented Nicola talking about the lived maternal experiences of having a baby with Down syndrome. And so bringing in the Down syndrome UK and how they're working and the research they're actually doing and the discrimination that they have received, the women who answered the survey, and they had 1,400 women who kind of highlighted the systemic discrimination between those who have Down syndrome and the medical professionals that an expectant woman will terminate when discovering their baby is Down. So once again, that personal judgment, having that professional information, informed decision-making, but then being supportive when the decision is made and not putting our own judgments and values onto other people. And how do we stay professional? Session or hour 16 saw another keynote by Molly O'Brien, and she was presenting the biomechanics of birth, so new learning and insights for practice. And so we know that midwifery is wide-ranging and looking at presentation focused on labour dystocia and the midwifery skills of recognising when birth goes awry using the art and science of watchful attending and being mindful. So the presentation highlighted areas of midwifery training and education that hinder understandings of anatomy and physiology in relation to the birth process and the baby's journeys through the pelvis. So once again, that art and that science, that understanding, that education. We also then had Ginger talking about obstetric first response team. And this is the one that broke the records with over 400 attendants. And that was presented in Spanish. And so looking at how the Royal College of Midwives in Lima have developed a volunteer program to support safe motherhood with providing counselling, telemedicine and reproductive health campaigns. And they relaunched the volunteer under a different name, so Brigada Pro, so First Obstetric Response, and so looking at how that has gone and how they're going to improve it and what it will provide with special tactical suit for field work that will help them identify and perform better within their activities. So basically sharing volunteers to the form of an organisation of Midwives Without Borders. And then we had Bravia talk about the Quality Maternal and Newborn Care, QMNC Research Alliance platform, aligning and accelerating community-led midwifery care and research. So they're doing a lot of work and has acquired preliminary funding needed to build a global platform and hire staff. So looking at guiding attendees to identify research interests and expertise to the three priorities and helping them work out to expand what they can do to once again build on the body of evidence that we know that was presented in the 2014 Lancet series and has been consequently making use and applying that knowledge and research. Paloma and Maria then presented traditional midwifery organising, the Algodio Roxo Association, and this was in Portuguese and English. So talking about midwives of the Brazilian Amazon using critical and decolonial research methods and interviewing traditional midwives of the Brazil upper Amazon region. And so once again, sharing takeaways from the stories, having a look at the place of traditional midwifery in a modern world and why it's so important that we work to preserve and strengthen this knowledge and these skills. Hour 18 saw Heather and Jeremy talk about white weight bias among midwives towards birthing persons with a higher body weight. We know obesity is an international issue and it does affect and does decrease a woman's choice or a birthing person's choice. And they were saying that their findings may inform future studies to determine if there's an association between perinatal providers' weight bias and clinical decision-making, quality of care and perinatal outcomes such as cesarean birth rates among birthing persons with higher body weights. Hour 19 saw Florence Wilcox collaborative working to enable women-centred care working within the NHS and the experiences of working alongside midwifery colleagues to expand women-centred holistic care as well as making some suggestions on how to build effective working relationships with obstetric colleagues, because it can sometimes come down to an us and them culture, it feels like it. Lesalotta and Elke then presented midwifery-led care during childbirth and annual report from the Belgian midwives in 2021. So they're looking at that and confirming that through their 1,500 registrations, 1,300 deliveries, performed autonomously by midwives, that almost 700 took place at home, just under 300 were assisted to a hospital, 155 delivered in a birthing house, and 182 in a midwifery-led unit inside a hospital, and that 276 women were referred into partum to the hospital for medical reasons. So that they can forward that the midwifery-led care is safe and of high quality, that women have a higher chance for physiological birth, and that maternal and neonatal outcomes are excellent and in line with scientific literature, that there needs to be an expansion of research into French-speaking Belgium and to disseminate more good results. Midwifery-led care is a safe and valid choice given the increasing demand. So once again, this conference being free and virtual and international, we can expand the languages that we present in to showcase the work that's being done in different parts of the country. Hour 20, Margaret presented baby-led birthing and kind of went through some old times and looked at the art of midwifery to educate and inspire the mother to trust the power of her body and her baby to work together in birth, and also to recognise that more help is sometimes needed to achieve a safe birth. We had another Spanish session by Brenda, who was looking at traditional practices in maternal health of the native people of Masinjenka, Cusco in Peru. And so once again, looking at the traditional practices in maternal health that are still enforced in the communities furthest away from modern life? And then how do we keep this going? How do we know this? How do we recognize this? Hour 21, Lucia was talking about strengthening midwifery research and leadership, another one in Spanish, and linking it to the Argentina Midwifery Association and launching a program to develop strengthening two areas that were being less explored in their profession, which is research and leadership. And once again, young midwifery leaders are taking the role in this. They've grown over the last 3 years, achieving important leadership roles, mentoring midwives, as well as more publishing. The Midwifery Journal Obstetrics continues to grow with more collaboration, more midwives publishing their research work from Central and Latin America with 2,000 subscribers. So once again, not having to kind of be forced to do it into English, but keeping it within local languages that work within those local similar areas. Hour 21, Amy, Dia and Anna presented variations in cesarean birth among Asian American birthing people with a perineal data registry. And so in the US, and kind of going through the highlights, the inequities in multiparous and null parous cesarean births among medically low-risk Asians. Further research is needed in disaggregation of perinatal outcomes and on research for low utilization of midwifery care and out-of-hospital births among US Asians. And then we had Jaylee, who was presenting experiences of obstetric nurses and midwives receiving a perinatal bereavement care training program, a qualitative study. So this was done, the qualitative study is conducted at a tertiary level maternity hospital in China. Six themes were coming out of their experiences, and that the nursing and midwifery professionals described the perinatal bereavement care training package as satisfying their needs and enhancing their needs in supporting the bereaved families and wanting to expand it to more than just the research trial area, because that will help contribute to forming a uniform care pathway and promoting a supportive perinatal bereavement care practice. Hour 22 saw Ines present a systematic literature review on induction of labour, exploring the sense or madness, and going through that the Flemish Association of Midwives did a systematic literature review on the effects of induction of labour at 41 and 39 gestational weeks, both compared to expectational management, and they saw 40 studies and 9 guidelines. And as we have experienced, the induction appears to have a higher chance of a negative birth experience, and the shared information decision-making process is flawed. Women often experience the induction recommendation as binding rather than a choice, sometimes feeling pressure, and that we need open, constructive, interdisciplinary dialogue is urgently needed to evaluate current induction policies. Hour 23 saw Tracy talk about mindfulness in breastfeeding preparation, a missed opportunity to optimise breastfeeding duration and mental health. And looking at 80 to 90% of women who stop breastfeeding the first 6 weeks are not ready to do so. That there are a myriad of effects, but looking at traditional antenatal breastfeeding preparation overlooks the influence of a dysregulated emotional state on the breastfeeding outcomes. So looking at some mindfulness practices that help support, and this is critically important for parents with a baby in NICU. And recent evidence suggests that a mindfulness-based approach to breastfeeding and postpartum is associated with increasing in breastfeeding initiation duration, self-efficacy, parenting confidence, and improved relationship quality. The last session before the final keynote was Patricia in Spanish talking about obstetric outcomes and costs in obese and normal weight pregnant women. So once again, we can see the international issues that we are dealing with, and they concluded that obese women had heavier newborns, more days of hospitalisation, cost of medication, procedures and supplies were higher compared to women of normal birth rate, and they had a cross-sectional study of 60 women. And then we had our final keynote closing ceremony by Céline Lemay, considering evidence and wisdom in professional reality. and she was talking about reviews of the literature. She was talking about how practical wisdom can be learnt, can it be taught, can it be developed, can it be cultivated, and kind of looking at the all context of care, practical wisdom can help women to use the strengths of evidence-based medicine and have a women-centred care. And this is what we need and we mean to flourish as a profession. And then in the closing ceremony, we did a brief rundown of the conference in which we had been counting which countries people came from, and there were representatives from at least 41 countries of the people who actually wrote in the comment box, which is more than last year, so increasing each year. At the end of the conference, those who sent in a selfie were included into the first cut of a selfie presentation as a way to say thank you, because without your involvement, then nobody gets to hear. And then the final cut for those who selfies who came in late will be done within the week. So once again, if you want to catch up with some of the latest evidence, this is a really good way to present your information. Come September, towards the end of the year, you'll start to see calls out for expression of interest for papers, but also for posters. So that was all of the presentations, the oral presentations that were given, but also there were posters. And so when you go onto the website page, you can click on the presentations or you can click on the posters. And we had 23 posters that are available online during the conference. And we will also have them in the conference archives as well. Posters were given the opportunity to have a WeChat with us via a podcast. Some people did this, so you get to hear a little bit more about the background of the person presenting and their topic. So that's on our podcast, available on Spotify as well. So make sure you click onto that. We're going to be doing more on that throughout the year. And also, as I said, click onto the YouTube channel, because the YouTube channel will be where all the presentations and the Facebook page for virtual International Day of the Midwife will be put out in the next few weeks. So you can catch up on anything that sounds interesting, or you want to go back because you want to listen again to something that you wanted to get some clarification on or get some contact details for. If you have any questions or you want to connect with us, then please email us info@gmail.com, and we will be more than happy to connect with you. If you're interested in being a facilitator, we will be doing expressions of interest for facilitators as well. We do provide the training. We'll get you, as part of signing up to be a facilitator, you are expected to turn up for a training session. You'll be connected to a master facilitator who will help guide you and support you while you are supporting the guest speakers as well. So this is going to happen every year on International Day of the Midwife. And I know there are lots of things happening now. The World Health has something coming out. The ICM has something coming out. ACM has something coming out. Your own places of employment have something coming out. There are so much happening on International Day of the Midwife. It can be overwhelming. But this can be done throughout the year to catch up. And remember, we need our continuing professional development. So this can help with that. It can also help for education as well, for students. They can look at a comparison of presentations in years past, or they can do a reflection on what they've learned from the presentations here. So this has been a wrap-up. I am going to say that I'm completely biased in this because I've been extremely lucky to have joined the committee a couple of months ago. Baptism by fire, absolutely. But I had already believed wholly and promoted the day and the fact that it is free, that it's available internationally. You just need to have a connection, and we try and keep the slides as easy on bandwidth as possible. So I'm looking forward to people putting their submissions in next year for posters, for oral presentations. Please remember this as a way to share what you're doing, whether it's a quality improvement program, whether it's part of postgraduate study, whether it's part of a major international study. They all are valid and they are all very, very welcome. So thank you very much for sticking with me today. and I'll speak to you on our next episode. Thank you for joining us today. You'll find all the links on Twitter, Instagram, and on the podcast website. If you are a midwife and you would like to share your research, your postgraduate studies, or even the quality improvement projects you are doing now, then email me at throughthepinard@gmail.com. Send me a tweet or send me a DM.